Signals, Wednesday, 8 p.m., and time for So What's Your Story. We're the only program originating in Houston devoted to live storytelling, and we're right here on listener-sponsored KPFT 90.1 FM Houston. I'm Warren Holloman. Tonight I'll be your host, and I'm proud to be part of the coolest team on the radio. Each week, Mary, Greg, Hank, Tatiana, and I celebrate the power of story by bringing you remarkable tellers who take us on captivating journeys, and then they return us safely home. Last time I hosted, we were preparing for Hanukkah, and we did a show featuring traditional Jewish stories told by Rabbi Seymour Rosell. Tonight, we're telling Christmas stories, getting ready for Christmas. We'll start with stories for children, and by that I really mean children of all ages. And then in the second half of the show, we're telling Christmas stories written from an adult point of view. I'll have more to say about that later. We've got a studio full of storytelling guests, all from Houston's vibrant theater scene. Ted Swindley from Stages Repertory Theater, Jennifer Dean from 80 Players, and Rich Johnson, formerly of Stages, and now back in Houston as an actor and radio voice talent. Ted, Jennifer, and Rich, welcome to So What's Your Story?
Thank you. Good to be here.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Well, I'm going to start with Ted.
Okay.
Over the course of your career, Ted, you've directed and produced over 200 plays.
Yeah.
You've written quite a few as well.
Mm-hmm.
Honky Tonk Angels, of course, is one of your popular musicals. Swing Step is another musical nominated for the Dora Award, which is the Canadian equivalent of the Tony.
Mm-hmm.
Your most recent work is Rebel Yell. You take on the challenge of talking about racism in the South in the 1920s and 1930s. And, of course, you're best known for Always Patsy Cline. It debuted in New York 21 years ago, and it's been showing all over the world since. And here in Houston, of course, we also know you and love you and thank you for starting Stages Repertory Theater.
Thank you.
You started in a basement, as you said,
told me,
with raccoons and leaky ceilings.
Yes, that's right. It was very glamorous.
You had theater that you hadn't even scripted.
Right.
And then you've become the second largest theater in Houston and the sixth largest non-profit performing arts producer overall.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that amazing? It's not bad for a boy from a small town in South Carolina.
That's sure. That's for sure.
Your grandmother is smiling on
you.
I know she is.
Yes, she is. Yes, she is. Yes.
Well, and Stages keeps growing.
Mm-hmm.
$32 million expansion project?
Yes, we're building a wonderful new theater campus, actually. It has three theater spaces, and a parking garage for lots of cars.
Yeah. We were there this weekend, and we parked a few blocks away.
As long as
it's not raining, it's fine.
Yeah, but this is going to be spectacular.
Yeah.
It really is.
My wife and I saw the ultimate Christmas show on Friday night, and we laughed nonstop for
two hours.
Good. It was great.
Yeah.
So when you were on the show last year, you told us some family stories, but they were stories really focusing on your very unique Southern grandmother.
Right.
Tonight, you're going to tell us a different type of family story that you've written.
Yeah. Well, you know, when my nieces were growing up, my oldest niece, Elena, who I'm very, very fond of, and I decided, you know, they don't need another toy. I'm going to write them stories. So over the years, I wrote them a series of stories. And I actually just selected the one I'm going to read about 10 minutes ago. So bear with me. I couldn't decide which one to read. But I wanted to read the most, I think, lighthearted one, and we'll go from there. So if you give me the go, I'll go.
We'll pretend to be your niece.
Okay, good.
And we're going to love it.
I will need to tell you before I start, though, it's a little dated because we do refer to a CD player. So please forgive me. Please forgive me about that.
Okay.
All right. The title of the story is Silent Nights. There is a cacophony of Christmas carols, jingle bells, jingle bells. Hark the herald angels sing. I'm dreaming of a white Christmas. Silent night, holy night. Everywhere you heard music, music, music. And everywhere the little blonde girl visited, there was a Christmas music. At home, on the radio, at the mall, in the church, even at the grocery store when she and her mother shopped for Christmas goodies. The little blonde girl loved music. She could even play Joy to the World and Good King Wenceslas on the piano. She wanted Santa to bring her a shiny new CD player for Christmas so that she could listen to music the whole year through. Then one day, just before Christmas, something terrible happened. She turned on the radio, and there was no music. She went to the church, and the choir opened their mouths to sing, but no sound came out. She sat at her piano to play, but when she pressed the keys, they were silent. The news came on, and all over the world, the music had stopped. Even church bells could no longer be heard. This was the most terrible thing that could ever happen. No one could believe it, especially the little blonde girl, who almost cried when she thought of the shiny new CD player that would be worthless with no music in the world. As the little blonde girl stood in the front yard of her house, she heard the sound of a small engine plane. She looked up as the plane got lower and lower. It was her neighbor, who lived down the lane, Mrs. Snigglesnack. Mrs. Snigglesnack was the little blonde girl's favorite friend. She lived in a tiny little house with a very big backyard. "That's so I have room enough to land my plane," Mrs. Snigglesnack explained. Her big blue eyes sparkled and her white hair stood straight up in a wildly wonderful hairdo made up by the wind. The plane, you see, was the old-fashioned kind with no windows or doors. Mrs. Snigglesnack loved flying through the open air. The little girl wanted to fly with her very badly, but Mrs. Snigglesnack always said, "When the time comes, I'll take you on a very special trip, magical journey." As the plane landed in the field, that was Mrs. Snigglesnack's backyard, the little girl ran down the lane right up to the plane's side. "Oh, Mrs. Snigglesnack, the most awful thing has happened." "What is it, dear? Is the sky falling?" she laughed. "No, it's worse than that. All the music in the world has disappeared. People can't even sing anymore." "Nonsense," said the old lady. "No music? That cannot be." So she cleared her throat and threw back her head to try to sing, but instead coughed and sputtered, and nothing came out.
Oh dear, this is the most awful thing that has ever happened."
What are we going to do?" asked the little blonde girl. Mrs. Snigglesnack thought for a moment and then said, "Come on, hop in the plane. It's time I took you on that journey I've been planning, promising you. This may be the best time to take you." So the little blonde girl jumped into the plane with her friend, and away they flew. Her blonde hair was standing straight up, just like Mrs. Snigglesnack's. But where were they going? They flew and they flew over the whole situation. The cities were dreary and silent. People walked in and out of the stores without buying any Christmas presents. In the countryside, the farmers couldn't work because they were too sad, and the crops were dying because there was no music. Suddenly, as they were flying over the mountains, the air became very rough, and the plane started to go up and up and up.
"Oh, my goodness," exclaimed the little blonde girl. "What's happening?"
"Don't worry," said Mrs. Snigglesnack. "This is the best part of the trip." Up and away they went until they came upon a fat cloud, where they saw an equally plump angel sitting in front of a very large computer. The angel greeted them.
"Well, hello, Mrs. Snigglesnack."
She obviously knew this particular angel, and she knew that he could help.
"Angus Angel," she said, "would you please tell me what's going on? The world has no music."
"I know that," said Angus. "Orders from upstairs."
"You see," explained Mrs. Snigglesnack, "Angus keeps his eye on this part of the universe, and the computer tells him how everything is going."
"It's a big job, too," said Angus, "keeping track of everyone, plus making sure that all the guardian angels are doing their jobs. And the weather?"
"Yes, yes," Mrs. Snigglesnack explained, "but you can't do something, but you must do something about the music." Suddenly the computer began to whiz and bang, and upon the screen a message appeared and flashed. It said, "People have quit listening, so I took the music away."
"Oh, dear," Mrs. Snigglesnack said.
"Angus,
the boss seems pretty angry about this."
"Well," Angus said,
There were apparently so much music everywhere that no one was paying any attention anymore. Even in the churches where people were singing songs about the real meaning of Christmas, they really weren't understanding what they was being sung.
"Well, what can we do about that?" said Mrs. Snigglesnack. "Surely there's something we can do."
The despairing little blonde girl had backed away into a corner of the cloud. She began to cry, and then she softly said the words, "Silent night, holy night, all is calm, all is bright."
Remember, said Angus to Mrs. Snigglesnack, "the very first Christmas started with a song."
"Oh, yes," she explained. She replied, "there was a multitude of angels with the heavenly host, praising God and singing, 'Glory to God in the highest.'" Angus warbled like a bad opera singer. "Glory to God in the highest. My voice isn't what it used to be, but I'll never forget that night when those shepherds really heard what we were singing, and they were quite shaken up."
"You were there?" Mrs. Snigglesnack asked.
"I sure was."
The little blonde girl was still in speaking the words of the Christmas song in the corner of the cloud, and she cried, "Round young virgin, mother and child, holy infant, so tender and mild."
A message began to flash on Angus's computer screen.
"Give the music back. I think they've learned their lesson."
Suddenly, like an angel sings, the little girl began to sing, "Sleep in heavenly peace."
The little girl smiled in great amazement at the return of her singing voice, so she and Mrs. Snigglesnack jumped back aboard their plane and waved goodbye to Angus.
"See you soon," said Angus Angel, "and next time you come, bring me some angel food cake."
"I will, Angus," she shouted over the roar of the little plane's engine. The little blonde girl blew a kiss to Angus, and he blew two kisses back to her. And from that day on, whenever she smiled, she had two beautiful dimples on her rosy cheeks. When she got home, Christmas came and the music was back, and as promised, the blonde little girl got a shiny new CD player from Santa. She took her present to show Mrs. Snigglesnack, who had a surprise for her. "Here's a special recording for you. It's from Angus."
"Really?" said the little blonde girl. "Why?"
"He says that you are the reason the music came back to the world, because of your love and desire for the world to really listen to the music again. The boss decided to give the music back."
"Let's play it and listen to the music," said the little blonde girl.
"Okay," as she put the disc into the shiny new CD player.
"Oh, by the way, he told me to tell you, this was the original soundtrack recording. I'm not sure what he meant by that."
So the little blonde girl pressed the on button, and there was a multitude of the heavenly host praising God and saying, "Glory to God in the highest, and on earth peace, goodwill to men." And if you listen real closely, you can hear Angus Angel's voice warbling above the group.
Hmm. How did your niece... Do you remember when you first read that story to your niece?
Oh, yes. Well, we had a deal. After the first year... All of the stories would have something to do with her own life. Yeah. There's a story about when she moved from her birthplace to a new home. And so after the first year, I said, "Now I'm going to give you your second story, but I'm not going to give it to you until you tell me the story I told you last year in your own words." So that was our deal every year. And she loved them. They were just and she treasures them today. And she has four boys.
And what, I don't know if you mind being asked this question to interpret your story, but what would you like listeners to take from that story?
Well, you know, I think it's a pretty simplistic message, really. I you know, there is so much today, and particularly more and more technology. Mm-hmm. We don't listen. We really, I think we've almost lost the art of listening. That's the reason I think the theater is so important. The spoken word, We need the spoken word. We need, not with microphones or not with all that heavy bass booming or whatever, but we need to hear songs simply sung or opera beautifully sung, but we need to listen. And that's what I think the play is
and
about.
And live, where we're actually in the room with the performer.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
If you're just joining us, this is So What's Your Story on 90.1 FM KPFT Houston. You can catch us at 89.5 in Galveston and 91.9 in Huntsville, and online at www.kpft.org. I'm Warren Holloman, and I'm here with Ted Swindley, Jennifer Dean, and Richard Johnson. I'm going to bring Jennifer in now. As an actress, Jennifer Dean has performed in dozens of plays around Houston, 80 Players, Fourth Wall, Main Street Theater, Classical Theater, Stages Theater, and she's directed several plays as well, Fourth Wall and 80 Players. She's worked as a communications director and worship associate at several Houston churches, and just a few months ago, she took a new position as marketing director for 80 Players, and let's start there. I think our listeners are going to be particularly interested in the Christmas show that opened this past weekend at 80 Players.
Yeah, so last weekend we opened It's a Wonderful Life, a live radio play. So yeah, it's kind of fun to get to talk about that on the radio. It's it's the classic story that everybody knows from the movie, set in 1946 on Christmas Eve in a radio studio. And so they're performing the show on air in front of a live audience. And so you have six actors who are playing a multitude of different characters. You've got your George Bailey and Mr. Potter and all of the Clarence the Angel. And then you have a live Foley artist who's making all the sound effects as well. It's just a really charming, beautiful way to tell the story that everybody loves with kind of a fun spin on it. It's really just, it's a great show. And I hope people will come see it. Audiences have loved it so far.
It's wonderful. I saw it on opening night. It's absolutely beautiful.
And it's so cool. It's a radio play.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just great. So you have the on-air sign, and you have the applause sign telling the audience, and the live Foley artist is really some fun gags with that. Just neat to see how they incorporate that. It's
like we have here. Where's the audience?
Exactly.
Where's the applause sign?
Well, stories come in many forms. We've just heard a narrative story. At the end of the show, we're going to hear one of Ted's plays. I think we could sort of call it a radio play. At least it's being performed on the radio. And now, Jennifer, you're going to present one of Ted's Christmas poems.
Yes.
It's called Dreamland?
Yes. So this is Dreamland. It's a poem lullaby.
Okay.
Each night we crawl into a deep, dark cave. But the cave is warm and very safe. We take small steps, feeling its warmth, the warmth of earth. Soon we feel secure in this place of rebirth. A few more steps, and then we're found by a lovely old chap called the Father Clown. The Feather Clown. He's made from tiny white plumes that come loose from the pillows in children's rooms. These feathers float to the cavern warm, and the feathers and the features of the Feather Clown take form. His features are fine. He's our friend, a spirit of time. He takes the first of us by the hand, and then a great line is formed, so we walk, hand in hand, and a line going deeper and deeper into Mother Earth's breast. The Feather Clown promises the adventure of rest. Deeper and deeper we go. There are so many of us, 10 million or so, and we all form a circle, still hand in hand, in the warmest and softest place. Place called Dreamland. In Dreamland, each light is made from the wings of a moth. The walls are made of silken cloth. The Feather Clown leaves us now in the great circle of rest. Then the angel of Dreamland comes to guard and to bless the children who've come to visit her nest. The angel of Dreamland bids the Feather Clown goodbye. And then we see the love in her eyes. She's not a bright angel. No, she absorbs the light as we stand in our circle. She flies to its middle and looks at each child with her heavenly sight. So we gaze into her loving glance, and she soaks up our light. As her eyes move and dance, so one by one, 10 million or so, we find the sleep, the rest, the time to grow. But just as I was about to gaze into the angel's eyes, I peeked over my shoulder, and to my surprise, I saw the feather clown walking hand in hand with another 10 million children, all walking together, bound for dreamland.
Thank you. That was beautiful. Very nice. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ted. Yeah. That's a really charming.
Thank you.
Just lovely.
Thank you so much.
Yeah.
Thank you. I actually wrote that poem because I couldn't sleep. And my father was in the hospital, and I was under a lot of stress. And I don't know why, but it was like, I've got to write a children's lullaby to calm me down.
Yeah.
So you wrote that not for your niece, but for yourself?
Oh, yeah. This was for myself to help calm me down. Yeah.
It's a beautiful picture, imagery of just that.
Don't know where it comes from, but I love it very much. I really do. I really do.
What was that like for you to read Ted's poem with him sitting here?
I'm sorry I had to.
I appreciate you correcting me on that. It's one of those
things. He's still a director, even when he's on the radio station.
That's okay. You want it to be right. It's always when you have a playwright or a writer or somebody in front of you. But I think there's what I have gained from my time working with different authors and playwrights is their appreciation of hearing other people's interpretations of their work. And it's just such a sweet, charming piece. So I enjoyed it.
Thank you very much.
We often say that writing is therapeutic.
It is.
But yours was intentionally therapeutic.
Yes, it was. I mean, no, that's very true. I do. Yes, you should see some of the notebooks I've written. They truly are therapy. But no, I do think they are, in a way, for us to heal ourselves.
Yeah.
I think to let us, grow in the sense of opening our minds to all kinds of possibilities. Mm-hmm. And that's what I kind of opened my mind to. And that's where, when a character like the Feather Clown pops into my head, it's just glee.
Yeah.
And then the things like the walls were of silken cloth, and the angel of dreamland with those, she was a dark angel. I love that she was a dark angel.
She absorbs
the light. Yeah.
It's just, I think we lose some of that in the technology of today, that we don't stop and put pen to paper and write and the imagery. There's just so much happening in our brains.
And I can't write at a computer. I still write on a legal pad.
I do the same.
Yeah.
It's hard for
can't
me to
do it. Yeah.
Well, thank you, Jennifer.
Yeah, of course. Thank you.
And thank you, Ted. Mm-hmm. We had talked earlier how a lullaby was the perfect way to kind of close this first segment of the show. In fact, before we go to break, let me say a word about the second half of the show so parents can decide when it's time to tuck the little ones in bed. Jennifer, you may have some children listening. Is that?
No, she's in bed.
Okay. So our first adult Christmas story will be Hans Christian Andersen's classic, The Little Match Girl. It's a reality check kind of story about a girl who is unable to experience Christmas because of her extreme poverty. It's a story that has truly stood the test of time. And then we'll finish the show with a short, thought-provoking play called Santa's Last Christmas. It's written by Ted. And it's about, let's just say, about an adult who isn't so sure if he still believes in Santa Claus. And Tatiana, you're rather young yourself, so I hope your ears were covered when I said all that.
Well, you can't prove that he isn't real. Christmas is too expensive for Santa.
Well, and Tatiana, now I hope your ears are not covered for this, because I heard some good news today about you. Congratulations.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
For those who don't read the New York Times, just kidding, Tatiana has been inducted into Lambda Pi Eta. It's the Honor Society for Communications.
Yes.
Congratulations. Yes.
Thank you. Yeah. I've been wanting to be in it for so long.
Well, that's
finally
a big
did.
Deal.
Thank
that's,
you.
That's really... So you should ask Hank to double your salary now.
I think he should.
Well, what have we got? Hank is your mentor, and he's going to give you a full congratulations next week. Oh. But I wanted to mention it this week.
Thank you, Warren.
Hot news.
It is.
Tell us about what have we got coming up this week in the story calendar.
Well, first of all, a big thank you, as always, to our sponsor, the Houston Storytellers Guild. Not only do they post our shows on their website every week at www.houstonstorytellers.org, but also they host a wonderful monthly gathering called a Story Swap. It's a friendly place to try out your new stories on other story lovers, or just come and listen. Story Swaps are usually on the fourth Tuesday, but this month, because of this whole Christmas thing, it was moved back to the third Tuesday. That's December 18th from 7 to 8:30 p.m. at Temple Emmanuel, located at 1500 Sunset Boulevard.
Great. And The Moth?
The Moth's monthly story slam is just around the corner, next Tuesday, December 11th at Warehouse Live. The theme will be instincts. You'll hear true stories about intuitions and premonitions, animal instincts and human hunches. You'll probably even hear a story about somebody's seventh sense that was kind of like a sixth sense, only better.
And if you come, look for me and Hank and Greg and Mary. We love to go to The Moth, and we love to meet others who share our love of stories and storytelling. And speaking of my co-host, what have we got on next week's show?
Well, next week, Hank is going to be hosting, and he's bringing back the students from Meyerland Middle School for the performing arts. Hank has them on the show every year, and their idealism always leaves us feeling so good about the future. I love these kids. And we're always serving up positive energy and personal stories on So What's Your Story? Only on KPFT 90.1 FM. And if you don't own a radio, that's no problem and definitely not an excuse, because you can listen to us stream live on KPFT.org and Facebook Live and on YouTube as well. And we'd love it if you like us when you leave.
Thank you, Tatiana. Now back to more stories in the second half of our show. I'm here with my guests, Ted Swinley, Jennifer Dean, and Rich Johnson. And we're going to transition from Ted Swinley's stories and poems to another writer you may have heard of. Hans Christian Andersen's Little Match Girl is not exactly a feel-good Christmas story, but it's one that has spoken to generations since its publication in 1845. Jennifer, I think we've all got our Kleenexes ready.
Oh, that's high standards. The Little Match Girl. Most terribly cold it was. It snowed and was nearly quite dark in evening. The last evening of the year. In this cold and darkness, there went along the street a poor little girl, bareheaded and with naked feet. When she left home, she had slippers on, it is true. But what was the good of that? They were very large slippers, which her mother had hitherto worn, so large were they, and the poor little thing lost them as she scuffled away across the street because of two carriages that rolled by dreadfully fast. One slipper was nowhere to be found. The other had been laid hold of by an urchin, and off he ran with it. He thought it would do capitally for a cradle when he some day or other should have children himself. So the little maiden walked on with her tiny naked feet, that were quite red and blue from cold. She carried a quantity of matches and an old apron, and she held a bundle of them in her hand. Nobody had bought anything of her the whole livelong day. No one had given her a single farthing. She crept along, trembling with cold and hunger, a very picture of sorrow, the poor little thing. The flakes of snow covered her long, fair hair, which fell in beautiful curls around her neck. But of that, of course, she never once now thought. From all the windows, the candles were gleaming, and it smelt so deliciously of roast goose. For you know it was New Year's Eve. Yes, of that, she thought. In a corner, formed by two houses, of which one advanced more than the other, she seated herself down and cowered together. Her little feet she had drawn close up to her, but she grew colder and colder. And to home she did not venture, for she had not sold any matches and could not bring a farthing of money. From her father she would certainly get blows. And at home it was cold, too, for above her she had only the roof through which the wind whistled, even though the largest cracks were stopped up with straw and rags. Her little hands were almost numb with cold. Oh, a match might afford her a world of comfort. If she only dared take a single one out of the bundle, draw it against the wall, and warm her fingers by it. She drew one out. Rsht! How it blazed! Oh, how it burnt! It was a warm, bright flame like a candle. And she held her hands over it. Oh, it was a wonderful light. It seemed really to the little maiden as though she were sitting before a large iron stove with burnished brass feet and a brass ornament at top. The fire burned with such blessed influence. It warmed so delightfully. The little girl had already stretched out her feet to warm them, too. But the small flame went out. The stove vanished. She had only the remains of the burnt-out match in her hand. She rubbed another against the wall. It burned brightly, and where the light fell on the wall there, the wall became transparent like a veil, so that she could see into the room. On the table was spread a snow-white tablecloth. Upon it was a splendid porcelain service, and the roast goose was steaming famously with its stuffing of apple and dried plums. And what was still more capital to behold was the goose hopped down from the dish, reeled about on the floor with knife and fork in its breast till it came up to the poor little girl. When the match went out, and nothing but the thick, cold, damp wall was left behind, she lighted another match. Now there she was, sitting under the most magnificent Christmas tree. It was still larger and more decorated than the one which she had seen through the glass door in the rich merchant's house. Thousands of lights were burning on the green branches, and gaily colored pictures, such as she had seen in the shop windows, looked down upon her. The little maiden stretched out her hands toward them when the match went out. The lights of the Christmas tree rose higher and higher. She saw them now as stars in heaven. One fell down and formed a long tail of fire. "Someone is just dead," said the little girl. For her grandmother, the only person who had loved her, and who was now no more, had told her that when a star falls, a soul ascends to God. She drew another match against the wall. It was again light, and in the luster there stood the old grandmother, so bright and radiant, so mild, and with such an expression of love. "Grandmother," cried the little one, "oh, take me with you. You go away when the match burns out. You vanish like the warm stove, like the delicious roast goose, and like the magnificent Christmas tree." And she rubbed the whole bundle of matches quickly against the wall, for she wanted to be quite sure of keeping her grandmother near her. And the matches gave such a brilliant light that it was brighter than at noonday. Never formerly had the grandmother been so beautiful and so tall. She took the little maiden on her arm, and both flew in brightness and in joy so high, so very high, and then above was neither cold, nor hunger, nor anxiety. They were with God. But in the corner, at the cold hour of dawn, sat the poor girl with rosy cheeks and with a smiling mouth, leaning against the wall, frozen to death on the last evening of the old year. Stiff and stark sat the child there with her matches, of which one bundle had been burnt. She wanted to warm herself, people said. No one had the slightest suspicion of what beautiful things she had seen. No one even dreamed of the splendor in which, with her grandmother, she entered on the joys of a new year.
What was that like to read a Christmas story that's not cheery?
Yeah.
But it's beautiful.
It's beautiful. Yeah. It's heartbreaking, but it's beautiful. I mean, I think to speak to the reality of what so many, especially in a city like Houston, do actually face, and the level of poverty, and the difficulty of this time of year that can be for families who maybe don't have the means. But yet, even in the glimpse of it, that the human spirit still finds hope, or dreams, or you know, love and the remembrance of someone. And so, yes, it is heartbreaking and not your typical Christmas, New Year's story, but yet there's beauty in it. So I had heard of the story, but never had actually read it. So I was really delighted to come across it. And yeah, it is. It's a mixture of that kind of heartbreak, but that beauty.
Yeah,
absolutely. Absolutely.
I'm struck by, you know, Ted wrote his stories for his niece because he felt children need something other than material things for Christmas.
Yes. Yeah.
And that's sort of what Hans Christian Andersen, as I understand, he felt that children, the serious issues of life weren't always dealt with in children's literature.
Right.
And he was saying we need to talk about these things too.
Right.
Hank mentioned to me, for example, he's the one who wrote The Ugly Duckling. I mean, that deals with a very serious issue that children wrestle with.
Oh, yeah.
And I think it's important to address those with children to give them understanding, even at that young age. They can grasp so much more than we often give them credit. So,
yeah. And I mean, I think the power of this story is just the irony that in order to experience Christmas, she had to be dying, and this was kind of a delusion. She experienced it as a delusion because that was the only way she could experience that.
Right. Yeah. Well, and I just, you know, as I was reading it, just that when she recognizes the star falling, she says someone is dead, and she doesn't even recognize
it's her.
It's herself, you know, that transition to being in the beauty with her grandmother. And so.
Right.
Rich, you have anything you'd like? Let's get your feedback here also.
No, I had to hold myself back from getting too emotional because there's a couple of touching parts in this script that Ted and I are going to do, and I go, I'll be just blubber by the time we get to. So I was just trying to remain calm, but it was beautiful. It was absolutely beautiful.
Jennifer, thank you.
Well, thank you all.
Yeah. If you're joining us late, this is So What's Your Story on 90.1 FM KPFT. You can also hear us online at www.kpft.org. Now, tonight's final story is a play by Ted Swindley. It's called Santa's Last Christmas. And joining Ted to perform the play is Richard Johnson. We've had Rich tucked away in the corner. We've been saving him for this moment.
I'm still here. I'm still here.
You can come out now.
Okay. I'm here.
For those who don't know Rich, he started his acting career here in Houston at Stages Repertory Theater under the mentorship of Ted, actually.
That's exactly right. That was quite a story. I walked into that theater for a scene class one night that I'd found out about. Back then, you know, you didn't have Facebook or the internet. And they had the scene class in one theater, and they were auditioning for another play in the other theater. And about that...
An all-male cast, I might
add. An all-male cast that played both women and men. I didn't know that at the time. And Ted came out, didn't know the guy, and he said, if anybody else comes up who thinks they can sing and they want to audition, send them in. We've got a big cast to fill. So I went to the scene class, and in the first break, I came out to the box office where the person was and asked if I could possibly go audition. And there it started my path. After that, I never went to another scene class. Therein started my path with Ted Swindley and changed things forever for so many good things.
Yeah.
He started out as a mentor, good friend.
Yeah.
It's like we're like brothers now.
Yes, we are.
You told me before the show that Ted said you were the ugliest girl.
Well, the show he was auditioning for was Pacific Overture, so everybody was Japanese, and there was a scene with the geisha girls, and I will tell you, Richard was the homeliest geisha girl you will ever see. He's a handsome man, by the way. We should say that.
I went home alone every night as a geisha girl. Let's just put it that way.
So the geisha girls are our segue to Santa's Last Christmas. Ted and Richard will perform. Anything you need to tell our listeners before we start?
Be sure the children are in bed, please. I worry about that. I really do. And you'll see why as I read the story.
Okay.
And Richard and I perform it for you. Santa's Last Christmas. The setting, the stage is bare, except for a simple kitchen table and two chairs. A glass of milk and a plate of cookies are on the table. At curtain rise, all that appears upstage is the silhouette of Nicholas in the shadows. As though from a television, we hear the droning music of the Christmas Mass at St. Peter's Basilica in Rome. Michael enters, pacing, and then stands still. The sound fades. Christmas Eve.
I was 42 years old, and I was at my mother's house again. The safe caress of an all-too-familiar room around me. Most years I'd been here on this night. It was in that room, where as a boy I waited excitedly for Santa to come. I was always unable to sleep, and suspicious of every creak and groan of the old farmhouse, alert to every snore and cough from my mother and father. And every year, I was certain that Santa was in this very house where I laid awake, and every year his visit was confirmed on Christmas morning, not so much by the bounteous collection of gifts beneath the tree, but by the fact that Santa had eaten the cookies and milk I had left for him on Mother's kitchen table. That was proof of Santa's nocturnal intrusion. But on this particular night, I thought it was funny that what Santa had actually accomplished was sort of a reverse burglary. I mean, in today's world, how could old Saint Nick possibly learn all those security codes needed to enter a home undetected by its sleeping occupants?
You see, Michael was in his 40s now, and Christmas Eve was quite different. What struck him most this time of year, being at his mother's house, was how his sense of anticipation for Christmas had been worn down. This particular year, there seemed to be no sense of suspense at all.
Oh, there was, of course, the tragedy of learning that Santa Claus was only a figment of society's imagination. I thought it was a cruel game. But at least in the years following Claus's extinction, there was still the excitement of gift heaps of presents all through high school. Then through college, the holiday brought a great sense of freedom from the chores of study and always the potential of a mischievous party on Christmas Eve. Or on more than one occasion, the delicacy of a church service about the birth of a Savior, which even today can still touch my emotions.
And when Michael's marriage years, and then Michael's marriage years, first with his wife and the children, who kept the anticipation level high. In those years, of course, he got to play the role of Santa himself.
Now, with the kids growing older and the divorce regulating the holidays, the evening before Christmas was filled with less spark as the years passed. This particular night, the ritual was complete. I saw the kids for Christmas Eve dinner at a fancy restaurant. We exchanged the usual useless gifts and drank a toast with unusually bad champagne. And then they go to their mother's house, and then I go to mine.
Michael was alone now. His mother in bed, alone now. He misses his father's coughs and snores. The farmhouse creaked its usual moans. He watched the boring and gaudy pomp of the Pope's ceremony at the Vatican. Then he changed the channel to the gaudier evangelical pageant from the plastic middle American luxury of some huge Baptist cathedral in his hometown. One last drag from a cigarette, television off, lights off, sleep, no dreams, just sleep.
Then I suddenly heard a very light knocking from the kitchen door of my mother's house. Who could it be at this hour? I checked the burglar alarm and looked out the cold window panes. I saw an ancient face, not old in the sense of deterioration, but ancient. Ancient in the sense of being a living relic, intense blue eyes and white hair. Frail, yet magnificent. I opened the door, and strangely, the security alarm didn't sound. Yes, can I help you?
You are very kind. I'm a bit faint from my trip. Could you perhaps spare a cookie or two and perhaps a glass of milk?
Of course. I couldn't believe that I just let him in. This seemingly homeless soul, this ancient face. As I prepared the snacks, this stranger, he appeared to be in some kind of trance. I would never think of letting a stranger to my mother's house. especially on Christmas Eve. But here he was.
I have been waiting to meet you for a very, very long time.
Me? Why me? Who are you, anyway?
I am what you used to believe in. That's right. I am Santa Claus, St. Nick, Kris Kringle, or whatever you like to call me. I am known by many names.
Okay, there I was, sitting in my mother's kitchen, a grown man in my 40s, in my bathrobe, for God's sakes, facing the incredible. And he's incredible. He's ridiculous. I mean, should I call the police?
If you like, but before you do, would you please hear me out?
Sure, yes.
I guess you think me mad, and I would be if I told you I came to this house when you were a boy and left all those presents so that I was magically able to serve the needs of all the children of the economically successful world with toys on Christmas morning. No, it was not me. I have never been in your house before.
So why'd you want to meet me?
Because of all the children, you believed in me the most.
Oh, suddenly my thoughts raced back to my childhood. I remembered how much I did believe. Every fiber of my being believed in Santa Claus. Every Christmas, my young body quaked in anticipation at the thought of the merry elf who loved me enough to bring me toys.
Someone told me how your heart had broken when you heard of my demise, how your sweet mother read you the historical account of my existence from the World Book Encyclopedia after some hateful child had angrily blurted out the truth to you. There ain't no Santa Claus. And then you locked yourself in the bathroom all day and night, refusing comfort. That was your first experience with true grief.
You're right. You're right. It happened just that way.
Could I perhaps have another bite of cookie and just a little more milk, please?
Of course.
You can see now that I am not the 800. I did not die 800 years ago. I have lived to a very ripe old biblical age like Methuselah. The credit to my longevity is to living in the very far north of Finland. You see, when I was young, I learned to hibernate like the bears, sometimes for years at a time. Today, they experiment with something called cryogenics. Well, I guess I'm living proof that it has a future.
It's incredible.
Yes, Michael.
Are you all right?
Yes, Michael. I'm fine for a man my age, but I need to finish this now, tonight.
All right, I'm listening.
Now, when I was a relatively young man, I did live as St. Nicholas and visited certain villages with gifts for children. My popularity grew far and wide until there were many imitators. I never expected it to get so far out of hand. Then came the story of the flying reindeer. Rubbish! Than the materialism without the miracle. Anyway, I simply came to tell you that this is my last Christmas. I am dying, you see. But before I do, I want to find the child. I wanted to find the child who believed in me the most. Simply to say thank you and leave you with a bit of my legacy. Now, here in this bag, here, there are a few scrawled notes thanking me for some simple acts of kindness. Here, there are some items from newspapers and magazines. See here? Read the headline. Read it.
Unexpected Christmas miracles.
Yes. There were several like that through the years, because through the years when I was awake, I'd find ways to journey here and there like what you'd call a hobo, trying to bring some of the magic back to a selected few. I felt it was important to remind humankind that not all things can be explained.
Why me? Why me? Why are you telling me all of this? Do you want me to set all the history books straight? Do you want me to tell the world that Santa Claus died this year? Should the world mourn your passing?
That is up to you. But let me say this. Whatever you decide to do with this information, I want you to think of one very important thing. Faith is a very special treasure, the most important of gifts. Have you ever thought so many children have believed in me, and then suddenly, like you, are told that I don't exist? That experience, just like for you, is their very first taste of faith. Faith, then in only a few years' time, is turned to grief. How then are we to turn to those children and say, now, believe in Buddha or Muhammad or the Christ? Do we wake up one day to someone telling us that they too do not exist? Our faith as children has always been shaken. So, now you have real proof. What will you do? This is, after all, Santa's last Christmas. Thank you again for believing in me.
And then he was gone. I sat there for a long time looking at those letters and clippings. Then I went back to that old familiar bedroom of my childhood. I had lit a last cigarette. I turned on the TV and I watched the Pope. Somehow the ceremony seemed much less hollow to me now. In fact, I felt a surge of anticipation for the next day.
A train whistle in the distance. The house was quiet. And for the first time in many Christmas Eves, Michael dreamed.
Mm. Wow.
Thank you. Thank you, Richard. That was good.
So maybe it's not a play for children, but it's certainly for adults looking back on our childhood.
Well, you know, I should have said the subtitle of the play is A Play for Grown-Up Believers.
Mm. I think I saw that in
your
script. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And showing the connection between faith and grief and loss,
mm-hmm.
and the connection to Christmas and Santa Claus.
Well, you know, I was traumatized. I really was. My sister was so mean to me, and we were having a fight. And she said, "There ain't no Santa Claus." Mm. And I did. I locked myself in the bathroom, and I would not come out. I was just so traumatized by the whole thing. So, and that's the kind of a running joke with my sister. She says, "You don't like me because I told you about Santa Claus."
It's funny you bring that up. My cousin Martha Ruth celebrated her 90th birthday last week. She gave me the worst spanking I've ever had when I, as a 5-6-year-old, told her 4-year-old daughter there was no Santa Claus.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
If you're listening, Martha Ruth, I forgive you if you forgive me. So, artistically speaking, we're almost out of time, but I wanted to ask each of you, give you a chance just to say what you've got coming up next, acting, directing, writing.
Well, the next thing is pretty soon. It's December the 9th. At 14 Pews in the Heights. It's a wonderful little space where we're doing a play slam. I know you've heard of poetry slams. We're doing a play slam mm-hmm. where playwrights come together and we read 5 minutes of anything from our plays
cool.
and try to wow the audience.
Hmm. And how do we get involved?
Just contact 14 Pews.
Okay.
If you type that in, you'll find it. It's very easy.
It's the number 14.
Number 14, 14 Pews.
P-E-W-S, for
right.
those who didn't grow up in a
That's right.
church.
That's right. And it has 14 pews.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, cool. Cool.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. It's going to be fun.
And you'll be the moderator.
Yeah, and I'll read some stuff.
Yeah.
Too, I guess. Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Jennifer, Rich?
Christmas happening at 80 Players, and then our first show of 2019 is Tuesdays with Maury by Mitch Albom, mm-hmm. The True Story, and I'm directing that. Excited. We've already had one reading of the script. Beautiful, story about what it means to truly live. And so excited to work on that. And then slated to direct Collected Stories at Fourth Well Theater, which is in May. So a couple directing projects. Yeah, directing projects ahead. Yeah. I'm not on the stage anytime soon, but I love getting to craft the stories as a director.
Yeah.
So.
And one of my favorite plays at Fourth Wall was one that I found out just yesterday that you had directed, Lobby Hero.
Yeah, I got the privilege to co-direct that with, with Kim Tobin Lail, and that collaboration. And
It's great.
It's a great show.
Yeah. Richard?
Well, I have my day job, which is totally different from what this is in the financial sector. But recently, and I think you and I were talking earlier, I through a recommendation of a friend, I put together a voiceover demo reel a few months ago and sent it in and got representation. I haven't gotten anything yet, but it was a fun project. A man by the name of Jim Conlon here in Houston, who's been doing voiceover for decades, helped me put it together, and he produced it, and I played it for Ted. He likes it. And
You're not telling him the most important thing you're doing.
Which is?
We're co-writing a play.
Oh,
yes, cool. We are. It's called 17 Doctors. And it's based on the fact of a friend of ours who saw 17 doctors and an Uber driver with the cure to healing in 2 years.
Oh, that's
and we're co-writing that.
We were out to lunch, and he said, yeah, I've got a friend who saw 17, he's been seeing 17 doctors. I go, that's the name of a play.
Yeah. Oh, so you got 14 pews and 17 doctors.
Yeah.
That's great. Well, it's hard to believe, but this hour has just flown by. When I think about the wonderful Christmas stories I heard tonight, and when I compare them to the traditional Jewish stories that we had on our November show, I'm reminded how important these holidays are in terms of giving us time to reflect on what gives our lives meaning and motivation. And whether it's Hanukkah or Christmas, at the heart of it is something we can never express too much, and that's love. Love comes through in all of these stories in various ways. Love for our families, our communities, and for all the world. And as Ted's play so beautifully reminded us, compassion for ourselves as well. Ted, Jennifer, Rich, thank you for being with us on So What's Your Story.
Great to be here.
Thank you for having us.
Merry Christmas.
Oh. Merry Christmas.
And speaking of Merry Christmas, we're going to go off the air with a song called Happy Christmas. In the spirit of this holiday love, I want to honor John Lennon, who died 38 years ago Saturday, and wrote a really nice song called Happy Christmas. And don't you dare turn up that dial. Up next is Cool Conversation with Flash Gordon Parks. Make 90.1 a part of every day, and while you're driving home, turning in for the night, or just chilling, join us Wednesdays at 8 p.m. for So What's Your Story? And treasure what you hear. You keep loving great stories, we'll keep bringing them to you. This is Warren, and along with the rest of the So What's Your Story team, we want you to never forget that it's never too late to live happily ever after. And as John Lennon always said, peace. And so happy Christmas.
KPFT is pleased to announce the KPFT Elf Party and EMI Toy Drive, presented by Electrolove, airing Sundays on KPFT HD2. The Toy Drive is Sunday, December 16th at Dan Electro's in the Heights. There will be great live music, food, and fun. A suggested donation of $10 at the door or $5 with a toy valued at $10 or more. Please bring a receipt with any toy you donate. So be a KPFT elf and help some children for the holidays. Santa Santa will be handing these toys out at Harris County Jail during the EMI event on Christmas. Come on out and bring a new toy for this worthy effort. Thanks from Electro Love and Mass Incarceration Houston, and a happy holidays from everyone here at KPFT Houston.